Welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast, sponsored by Munters, experts in climate control systems for safe, high-quality battery cell production and R&D, delivering stable, low dew point conditions whilst minimising energy use. Episode 10, Advances in Battery Management Software, how adaptive charging is delivering faster charging rates and enhanced cycle life. In the earlier episodes of this podcast series, I've spent a lot of time talking to companies who are developing new batteries, innovative anode chemistry in particular, in order to drive battery performance to the next level, which is necessary for the mass adoption of this technology. That's, to a large extent, the hardware side of battery development, the physical constituents of a cell, how it's constructed. In this episode, I want to talk about software, about the role battery control systems can play in maximizing the performance of batteries, and in the specific case of this podcast, how software can unlock hidden performance from existing battery systems. By the way, thanks for listening. We've reached episode 10. It's been a very enjoyable journey of discovery for me over the last few months. And happily, there's a lot of people listening all around the world, hundreds of downloads every week now, so that's a great start. And we've got lots more in the pipeline. So if, by the way, you want to contact me about future interviews or advertising on the podcast, you can contact me by email at ken.davis@gsemedialtd.com. My email is in the show notes. But back to today's episode. I'm joined by Dr. Ian Campbell of Breathe Battery Technologies, who are creating software that fundamentally changes the performance of existing batteries. I think you'll enjoy this. It's a really interesting conversation. I am very pleased to be able to welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast, Dr. Ian Campbell. Now, Ian is the CEO of a company called Breathe Battery Technologies, and they make fairly bold claim: we make batteries better. So welcome, Ian, and we're going to talk in the course of the next half an hour or so about exactly how you do that. So very, very, very warm welcome to the Battery Technology Podcast, Ian.
Thank you very much, Ken. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
I think a good place to start is to just learn a little bit more about Breathe, in the sense of where you came from, how it's developed in the course of the last couple of years, because I know you're a relatively new business, and I'm just interested in terms of how the business got going and how it's propelled itself so far so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. So we spun this business out of Imperial College London in 2019. So we're about 4 years old today. So yeah, I think we're still relatively young, certainly in the context of the whole journey that we have planned for the company and the ambitions. So I think historically, a group of us met at Imperial while doing PhD programs. So I'm Irish myself, an engineer, and by training a mechanical engineer, and became quite, I think, optimistic on what I thought could happen on the electrification of transport around 2013 and 2014, as I saw this huge need, I think, along with much of the rest of the world, for these electric cars, or these cars to electrify. And I became fairly focused on then the battery system, with this thought that it would be the bottleneck on the rate and the extent of electrification of transport. So then I moved from where I was in Germany, in Munich at the time, to London, and started a PhD program at Imperial in the electrochemical science and engineering group. I went down a very enjoyable and very, very deep rabbit hole into battery electrochemistry and battery engineering then for four or so years. And I spent a lot of time there then developing state of health diagnostic methods for batteries, and also methods for modeling batteries to try and optimally trade off how much energy they can store with how fast they can be charged and discharged. And it was through that kind of PhD program, those activities there, I met a couple of my co-founders, I think, which was, you know, part of my ambition at the time, that I would meet these kind of incredibly smart, talented people. And I did do that. Two of those, then we subsequently founded the company with Jan, our chief technical officer today, and then Greg, who leads that academic research group at Imperial and was the PhD supervisor for me and Jan. And I think that's sort of the very very early stage of the origin story of how we met and got together. I was during those 4 or so years of that research and those PhD programs that the three of us, together with a group of others, you know, we were consulting a lot on batteries for transport and for different applications around the world during that time via the college. And I think we started to see really frequently that a lot of people were developing solutions, but the solutions were very often band-aid type solutions. They weren't often addressing the root cause issue in a battery cell or a battery system. And then it wasn't making, let's say, the battery system progress drastically forwards, right? It was very, very incremental progress year on year. And I think we looked at that and I think we felt that it was incredibly frustrating and that something needed to be done about that. And we looked around the world, it didn't feel like enough people were spending then the energy, the time, and the let's say, very deep thought in finding ways to solve root cause issues of battery systems. So at the end of the PhD programs, we spun out Breathe from the university and went full time. And we've been growing it then in earnest for about 4 years now today.
So what role does the Faraday Institute play in this? Because I noticed, obviously, doing a little bit of background research before this conversation, they're obviously a fairly significant player in strategically how you've developed. Worth just understanding that relationship before we get into the technology itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Faraday Institution, under the umbrella of the Faraday Battery Challenge here in the UK, is one of the components of the UK government's big push to be a leader in battery technology development around the world. So our co-founder, Greg, our chief scientist in the company today, Greg leads one of the big programs as part of the Faraday Institution called Multiscale Modeling, which is the program's push to be a leader in specifically battery modeling across scales. So let's say it's everything from very fundamental sort of like atomistic type modeling all the way up to the type of models that might run online on real-time systems in cars today. Relatedly, at this time that we spun out the company, I think the Faraday Institution and the Faraday Battery Challenge had just been starting to wind up. And they awarded us, when we started Breathe, the very first entrepreneurial fellowship that they awarded. And this was critical for us. It was allowed us the kind of equity-free financing, you know, the very early days of the company, to get this thing from purely a concept in PowerPoint and on whiteboards and in our mind, and then into the lab where we could start prototyping the technologies that today underlie the products that we build. So I think that was £100,000 of grant funding they awarded us. And that was one of a couple of components and awards back then that were equity free and that were really this kind of financial launch pad for us to go full time and really develop then. Yeah, technology that I think is technology that is incredibly valuable today.
I guess a good place to start with this is just defining the problem you're trying to solve. I spend a lot of my time on these podcasts talking to people who are developing new battery systems, completely new technologies, new chemistries, new anodes. You guys, if I understand it correctly, are not doing that. You're actually taking existing battery systems as they exist today and trying to make them perform better. That's my high level take on it. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but it'd be interesting for me just to understand what you define as the problem you're really trying to solve with the technologies you're developing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a great question. And it's a super great question to ask in the context of what is happening across all these different players in the battery industry, right? Like the ones you mentioned that manufacture anodes or cathodes or other material components for the battery system. So I think fundamentally why we choose to add the value from the route that we add the value is that all of these companies that operate today in this battery landscape, they are all effectively trying to solve the same end user experience one way or another. And all of those ways are very different. Sometimes they're competitive and sometimes they're highly complementary. But those, let's say, end user experience points that we are all trying to address, whether or not it's me here today with you in my role at Breathe or one of the anode companies or a cell manufacturer or a company that's taking a new bet on a very new chemistry, let's say the post-lithium ion stuff that we might see in the media in particular, or a company that's developing battery packs and doing the hardware engineering, we're all trying to affect and enhance the energy density of the battery system. So how much range or runtime we get out of our car or electronics. We're trying to make the power better so that it can charge and discharge faster, and we have a greater ratio then of uptime to downtime with all of these battery-powered systems. We're trying to make the longevity better, so the cycle life, so how many times we can charge and discharge these assets, these batteries. And that's partly for the user experience, the longevity. It's partly for the warrantability. If I'm the OEM or the manufacturer shipping these things, I need to make sure they last. It's partly for the sustainability as well. And that's especially the case as the sort of battery pack value and size keeps increasing, like we see in cars today and in stationary storage. And then cost and safety. So these are the kind of, five or so attributes that we are all pursuing. And what we do at Breathe specifically is we find ways with software to affect these end user experiences or these kind of like metrics very, very fast. So very low lead times for our customers and in very large increments. So with software-based products that are incredibly potent at enhancing these different battery attributes. And what these software products that we build do is they're complementary then to maybe most of the companies that you would have spoken with before and do speak with today, where a new anode technology, a new cathode, a new electrolyte material comes along. They usually then has some balance of attributes or certainly requires control, intelligent control. And that is what our software does, sitting alongside these materials, these batteries, and extracts more performance, more safety out of them so that we can deliver that at a lower cost. And around that, we build two offerings today, one called Breathe Charge, which significantly decreases the charging time while keeping all of the other attributes fixed so that you can enjoy the same cycle life and longevity. And then another product that significantly enhances the longevity of the system, so the cycle life, while maintaining exactly the same charging speed.
And this is all achieved through software application. There's no hardware involved at all. This is modeling-based software development, which presumably can be downloaded and instantly changes the charging performance of those batteries.
Exactly that, yeah. And this is possible because, and it's possible because, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on which way you look at it, the materials that are developed, the cells and the battery systems that are developed today are heavily underutilized. And the control strategies, the battery management strategies that are baked into a battery management system, whether that be in your earbuds and your earphones, you could be using them for gaming or for the workplace, or all the way up to the laptop, the smartphone environment, or the electric car. The control strategies that are baked into them are really, really archaic. They're outdated, and they extract only a fraction. They extract less than unity fraction of what the capability of that system is. So when we apply then embedded software functions that sit on a battery management system alongside the cells and the battery pack, we can extract a lot of that remaining value out of that. And we can offer it up to our customers in a couple of different ways, depending on what their product goals are, what their company goals are, and what the end user experience they want to deliver is.
Can you give me a sense of the measurement of that, in the sense of what proportion would you say within the systems you're working with now, what proportion of the latent capacity or the potential capacity within that system is currently being accessed? And what proportion do your systems allow to be accessed?
Yeah, it's a spot on question. It's incredibly hard to put one number on this. And the way we work as a company, firstly, is we always go to our customers and ask them where they are today and where they would like to be. And we help them bridge that gap up to the limits of what's physically or electrochemically possible with the software that we add. It's very case by case in the sense that some companies out there today are relatively advanced in how much they're extracting from the batteries they buy. And then some have more of a journey to go on to get more utilization out of that. But I can make it a little bit tangible for us here. And I think we've two quite nice examples in the short life of the company to date. We spent broadly the first years building some very deep technology platform that allowed us to provide these kind of performance attributes. And then two of the very nice commercial wins that we had were one with Oppo, with our Breathe Life products. We're on a large number of handsets globally now with them, starting with Find X5 and Reno 8 series. And we enabled them to increase the cycle life from around 800 up to the 1000 plus, circa 1600 cycle mark. And that's really by taking out ablating this kind of knee point or this kind of sudden fall in the health of the battery system later on in its lifetime. Mm-hmm. And on the charging side, where we applied this to a battery system with a different form factor of cells with our customer Varta, been able to there to reduce charging time by a couple of different numbers depending on what set of charge window we look at. But if you pick the biggest one, it's 43% charge time reduction in this 0% to 80% set of charge range. you know, these kind of numbers are examples, and like I say, they're case by case depending on where a customer is. But I think where we build this company and strategically position this, and why we think as well, there's such an opportunity in this space today, is that it's very, I sort of draw an analogy from smartphones. It's very much where these kind of, let's say, traditional brick or dumb phones were that I grew up with in the early 2000s as a teenager, where they're very, very hardware-defined devices. There's not a very complex or intelligent software layer on top of them. And then, you know, historically we had a sort of like watershed moment when Apple came along and introduced the iPhone, and then increasingly made these devices software-defined from that point of time onwards. We start to see a lot of this sort of software definition of the product in the vehicle space today, with cars becoming software defined. And really the battery space is, I think, on the cusp of then this kind of like, let's say, this refresh as well, where batteries until today, until the last number of years, have purely been pieces of electrochemistry and mechanics and thermal dynamics. And now there is this smacking great opportunity to put a piece of intelligent software on top of them and move in this direction of software-defined batteries that provide a completely different experience to the older ones.
The other benefit, I guess, that you can bring to this is that it's fairly immediate. You know, I spend a lot of time talking to people who are developing things in the medium term. Some of these chemistries, you know, they need to be proven over a very, very long period of time. What you seem to be describing here is something which can be fairly quickly applied to a battery system to generate some fairly meaningful results. So am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. This is very, from a commercial perspective and how we build our business, this is very much strategically the intention, because we think that this industry, as we look at automotive especially, but broadly the battery industry, should move incredibly fast. It's not just an opportunity, but it's also this necessity that we enhance battery performance fast because of what's happening with the climate and the world around us. I think we've had so many examples. I was sitting here in the sort of tail end of 2023. We've had so many examples of some pretty catastrophic climatic events around the world. So it's partly that sort of, let's say, larger scope vision of how our business fits into the world, that we want to be able to deliver significant enhances to battery performance fast. And it's partly just pure commercial sense, right? It's incredibly competitive landscape for a lot of companies out there right now across these different markets that use batteries. They are all almost universally to find ways to do more with less. And that is, let's say, the purpose that we build our company on the back of, where they can, in a very short amount of time and in a very affordable manner, extract a very significant amount of extra performance or longevity or end user battery system. So yeah, for this reason, we build software products and add them to the battery system.
Now, I'm really interested in this concept of evolving the health of each battery. Now, I mean, are you diagnosing battery health literally on a battery by battery basis, or are you diagnosing health on a manufacturer by manufacturer basis? I just want to understand the scale, the granularity, if you like, that you're working at. Does your software literally look at an individual battery and say, well, this is the proportion of potential capacity that's being used at the moment, and this is the potential improvement we can make? So is that being done at an individual battery level or at a manufacturer level?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great question. And it's been done at an individual level. I think this is one of the cruxes in terms of the changes that we try to affect as a company in this landscape today, and that we think should be reflected in how batteries are controlled going forward. So like traditionally, and I think sort of like as I discovered this during my PhD program, to my absolute great, great amazement and sort of at times shock and horror, all batteries, whether or not it's the one in your pocket or the one in my pocket or the one in my car, let's say outside, or my partner's car down the road, you know, all of these batteries are controlled more or less in exactly the same manner, irrespective of whether they're brand new or much later on, 3 years old in your smartphone, 5 years old in your laptop, or 12 years old in your vehicle. And it's absolute madness, because the battery system itself is absolutely not the same battery system on month two, month 12, or year three or year seven of its lifetime. And for that reason, it needs to be looked after very differently. It needs to be treated very differently, in a kind of very analogous way to how you and I would treat our bodies maybe differently as we age as well, right? And I think traditional control is very ignorant of that. It doesn't take that kind of health adaptive approach. And what it means is it leaves a huge, smacking great amount of performance on the table when these battery systems are new. That could be a $10,000 battery pack in a car. It could be significantly more valuable thing that's been underutilized in a stationary storage system. And it means ultimately the end user loses out, right? Because they're not getting access to what they're paying for, essentially. And then later on, as these things age, these traditional control strategies that are designed for a single point in these lifetimes, what they're doing is they're then becoming at some point in time too aggressive for the now degraded state of health of that battery system. The battery has decreased in its capability, but the control strategy is still treating it like it was something relatively newer. And what this is doing is it's driving what we so frequently see in this battery industry, this knee point, this rollover effect. And that, you know, as end users, as humans, you and I are on the street and we feel like now our phone doesn't last the day anymore. We feel, I think, you know, God forbid that our very expensive car battery isn't lasting the journey anymore. And this is then a kind of unfortunate, I think, end user experience that we become very accustomed to that doesn't need to happen. It doesn't need to be there.
It's interesting because, and just so I collect that correctly, the control mechanisms, the control systems for these batteries are defined currently at a single point of performance of these batteries. And what you're saying is this, as a battery degrades, this whole concept of degradation, you can change the control parameters with these systems, which take into account the fact that degradation will take place in a way that the current systems don't. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, spot on. Exactly that. And I think, you know, our customers and sort of the world at large, all of the companies that we buy our enjoyable electronics from, or these vehicles from, that the engineers and these teams, incredibly, incredibly highly skilled people, stuck between an incredibly painful rock and a hard place where they have to make design trade-offs and attribute trade-offs for the end user between how much of this performance are we going to give early on in the life, or how quickly are we going to let this thing die later on in the life. And it's a bad position for these companies that build the electronics, the cars, the products, and it's a bad then experience in the end for the end user. And our, let's say, initial products that we build, Breathe Charge and Breathe Life, they are all about unlocking that trade-off and providing a difference, let's say, a different optimization front that our customers can move along.
So how does it work? I mean, clearly there's going to be commercial sensitivities, which I would not want you to cross the lines of, but I'm interested in digging a bit deeper in terms of how the mathematical modeling works.
Yeah, absolutely. We can certainly go and explore a little bit into this. So we in the company build from a technical perspective with a lot of energy and focus two core areas. One, the battery algorithm development, the mathematical development, so that we can build battery models and simulations of what's happening electrochemically, thermally, and mechanically to understand and have visibility into what states our batteries are experiencing at any point in time. And we also employ some incredibly talented embedded software engineers, and they package this up as incredibly high quality software that we then embed into the battery management systems of our customers' products together with our customers. And this package of insights into what's happening inside the battery, plus very intelligent control layers wrapped around those insights and leveraging those insights, that's what then delivers these kind of product level benefits and end user experiences. And from then, this kind of, let's say, battery model perspective, what we are always trying to do as a company, and I think, you know, what this entire industry should be doing and spending its energy on, and it certainly does in many respects, and academia in particular is very good at this, spending thought on understanding how we can evaluate what are called cost functions better, right? So that we can know that for any control that we affect on a battery, whether that might be, for example, increasing charging speed or decreasing charging speed, or letting it go into the state of charge window, or letting the customer access this extra little bit of runtime, or move the voltage window this way. What is the effect of that? What is the cost of that on the system elsewhere? You know, is there a large or a small cost? Is the system sensitive or insensitive to these kind of control strategies that we implement? And what's the effect of it? Is it going to decrease the cycle life? Is it going to, you know, it's something that we absolutely can't have happen? Is it going to decrease the safety? Is it going to in some way affect negatively one of the other attributes of the battery system? And if with battery models and mathematical modeling, we can assess and access the answers to these cost functions, these trade-offs in real time, in a manner that's incredibly reliable, let's say, and can be delivered and embedded on today's low-cost microcontrollers, like an ARM Cortex Core, for example, or whatever, that's embedded in a small consumer electronics device or an electric car, then we have a basis, some insights into the electrochemistry, into the thermodynamics, into the thermals or the mechanics on which to make well-informed control decisions. So that is then, let's say, from an engineering strategy, what we pursue as a company. We think it's an incredibly rich vein of effort. And it's something I think, you know, in a different context, our co-founder, Chief Scientist Greg, you know, pursues via the multi-scale modeling program. You know, UK government pursues this, and many governments pursue this kind of strategy around the world. And I think we're certainly building, quite a strong business on the back of that to date. And I think we want to also use that as a bit of a flashlight or a beacon to showcase the rest of the world what is possible here and have more investment directed into this area.
Fascinating work. One question just struck me as we were talking there. Obviously, one of the issues always is when we're talking batteries is safety. Presumably, one of the reasons why designers have a very conservative approach to control systems is just to make sure that safety is not being implicated at all. Do the changes that you make from a software or from a control systems perspective have any bearing on the safety question, or is it completely safety neutral?
Yeah, they do. They do exactly that. And it is exactly the case. I mean, safety is absolutely paramount, and it is only becoming more and more paramount as the energy density of these batteries increases. And we carry more energy in our pocket or more energy on the floor of the car. So with the strategies that we develop, by making this transition or this step change from strategies which are ignorant of the evolving health of the battery system into strategies which are cognizant of that health, it is then treating the battery in a much more, let's say, kind of a very electrochemically respectful way with that knowledge of its health later on in lifetime. I think fundamentally this is, say, principally and fundamentally, this is an approach that I think we should, as a society and as engineers, been carrying out from the very beginning with developing batteries, understanding that the control needs to be in line with the battery health. This is one of the ways in which we as a company and me myself individually also then consider the safety aspect and try to build a product portfolio and try to build this company around ways where we treat batteries exactly in the way that need to be treated and can then create some operating space, some additional headroom for our customer engineering teams as well to make sure that they always maintain the safety margins that they need to maintain.
This whole concept of understanding an individual battery as an individual and understanding its health, diagnosing its issues, understanding its performance at an individual battery level. I mean, this is really fascinating. How does your technology roll out? How does it actually get delivered, if you like, to the point of operation?
We do have the embedded software engineering team that sit in-house in the company today. And what we do today is we practically go and sit together with the embedded software engineering teams of our customers as well, both in automotive and in consumer electronics and across audio, laptops, and smartphones. And we provide them a software library, a function that they can flash then onto the microcontroller on their systems as part of the build of their software system. It's very straightforward for them. The sort of the I/O, the inputs, outputs are very, very straightforward. And connects up with all of the existing sensors that they have available to them today. And that's part of the sort of hardware agnostic nature of it. I think, you know, there's a timing question in every startup. And I think one of the nice backers or boosts to the timing being spot on for what we're doing with Breeze today is that almost every device on the planet now is becoming internet connected. All of our smartphones have been for a long time. And I think there's very few cars going to roll off the production line in the next years that don't have over-the-air update capabilities as well. And what this then means for us is, again, a smacking great opportunity where we can be rolling out software products, not just overnight once our customers have then the over-the-air update facility installed to new products, but we also can then even accelerate that kind of deployment roadmap very, very quickly by deploying retrospectively to products that are already on the market. I think that's just sort of incredibly exciting opportunity for us in the company and also, I think, for this industry.
So what keeps you awake at night, Ian? What's the big challenge? What's the next big challenge for you guys to overcome in this kind of journey that you're on?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think maybe two different thoughts on it. One is that there is an incredible war for talent out there today. And I think that we try to do in our company, of course, everything that we can in terms of making sure that people here have absolutely magnificent career opportunities and growth prospects in front of them with a very fast growing company that that cares quite heavily about them. But I think it's a reality that there's quite a shortage of talent out there today, especially battery engineers. There's a lot of great efforts, and we mentioned Faraday Institution earlier on in this in the UK context is a great example of some entity that is investing very heavily in the talent production pipeline, investing in funding PhDs especially, but also then engaging with sort of STEM activities at a sort of pre-university level as well to make sure that people understand what impact batteries can have on the planet, but also then what a cool engineering opportunity it is or scientific opportunity is to go and work on these items. So I think filling that pipeline with more STEM candidates, and then once we have then that quantity of people available, making sure that we as a company versus those others can access them, can win them, can secure them, that's critical for us. Today, so far, I mean, we're incredibly successful in delivering on our ambition of having some of the greatest talent in this company. We're about 30 or so people today at the time we're having this conversation. 14 of those or so are PhDs that we've very, say, tactically recruited from different locations around the world to bring the core experience and know-how that we need to deliver these kind of gains and products in our company. We continue to do that. It's one of the reasons that we're located here in London as well. Outside of the say, talent war, I think one of the other areas is that today this industry spends an absolutely enormous amount of cost, time, and energy validating the cycle life of battery systems. And it's an incredibly large break on the progression of technologies. And I think, in all of the different conversations you've had with companies that are pursuing different technological or even commercial approaches to making these batteries better, I don't think you can have a conversation with any one of them where they won't experience the pain of having to prove out the longevity of the battery system in a lab environment by brute force, trial and error, charge and discharge methods over the full cycle life. It's a problem in every market for batteries, consumer electronics through to automotive, and it's more of a problem than I think is palatable at all in energy storage or ESS, where the cycle life is incredibly long when you have like a sort of even 10,000 plus cycle life asset. This is a monumental issue that I think isn't unique to us. It's a facet of this battery industry today. But unfortunately means that there's a significant overhead on the lead time and the validation then of new technologies between every anode manufacturer, every component manufacturer, every cell manufacturer, every software company. And I think if as an industry collectively, we can find ways to increase trust and also then find both technical and commercial approaches to reduce the requirement for this brute force approach, I think this whole thing can move so much faster. And then when you and I go out and we consume or we live our lives, we can have a better experience faster and sooner.
Ian, that's been a great 30 minutes of just understanding a little bit more about the work that you guys are doing at Breathe, and it's fascinating. And I will watch your progress with a great deal of interest, but I think you've got every grounds to be very optimistic about the future.
Super stuff, Ken. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Battery Technology Podcast is a copyrighted GSE Media Limited production. For more details on how to reach us, you'll find our contact details in the show notes or at our website, www.batterytechnologypodcast.com.